Hello and welcome to FFS. I'm David Coulthard, and with me, actually sitting right next to me, which makes me a wee bit nervous, having spent several weeks only doing this remotely, is the real life Eddie Jordan.
Ah, yes, it's me. I'm not sure why I'm happy to see DC, because I can imagine with the guests we've got here, this could unfold into chaos.
Chaos. Well, hopefully not. Let's keep it professional. And we're both in London together at the Talk Sport Radio Studios.
Absolutely.
And that's a clue as to our guest this week.
It's the first time I've ever seen him, been with him in his company, without having pints of Guinness in front of her hand now. So, DC, could you change that and maybe order up some?
Oh, we'll definitely make sure we have a drink afterwards. But, You know, I've been meaning to talk to you about your drink problem.
I've got
and that you don't pay for it.
They're not all just drink-related. Anyway, this person, I have to honestly admit that I'm a massive fan, not just in recent years, but I was obviously a fan in his early years. He was with Man United, one of my greatest friends, which is Kevin Moran. He was also there with Brian Robson, and he was also there with Roy Keane, Dennis Irwin, McQueen, and a whole lot of other people. But before we go on to Man United, he also, you Spurs fans out there, yes, he was part of Spurs, and he was part of Ipswich, and I think won a UEFA, won a European Cup, and he won the FA Cup, which is all
FA Cup was 78. I was a kid, came down from Glasgow. So I was on the verge of the side, but in those days there was only one sub, and it wasn't me that day. And the following morning, Bobby Robson, my manager, said, "You're not quick enough. Get on a plane, get over to America, and I'll make you no beaches for you during the summer. Go over to America." Well, what he didn't realise was I was out there for 3 months.
On the turf.
It was magic. Miami, Lauderdale, Tampa.
Why are we not
Portland,
surprised?
Vancouver, Toronto. Wow, I'll tell you what. It was magnificent.
That actually coincided with a spurt in Scottish bursts in that area 9 months later.
1978, and I wasn't married at the time. So you're right.
Yes.
You could be right, David.
Excellent.
When you two Scots actually calm down and put some semblance of sense into this programme, I'm the only sensible one here, folks, this week. The other two have gone off on a different tangent. But anyway, I think we should talk about...
What were you doing in 78? Were you fixing wheels for Benetton or was something
actually,
like that?
I was trying to be a racing driver.
Nicking cars, more likely.
I was trying to be a racing driver. I'd just been signed by Marlboro, which was the best thing I ever did. And I met Niki Lauda, and I wouldn't have had a team without him. So we can talk about that later, because it's not really that important. We've been through that several times. We're here to talk about you.
Right.
And
you haven't actually introduced to our audience, who may not recognise his incredible accent,
Alan.
Who our guest is. You haven't said. You've got to do the full reveal.
So, ladies and gentlemen, forgive me, because you might have thought Brazil and Eddie Jordan. Yes, we did win Brazil in 1983, but it was David Coulthard who crashed into everyone and yet made it possible for me to win yet again.
You're welcome.
Anyway, Alan Brazil, one of my all-time heroes, because he went to a whole range of clubs. And I remember, and I might actually ask him this, because I grew up with green in my blood in Ireland. And, of course, the only green that you could get then was Celtic. And I know he was there in the academy at a very early age. And I'd just like to know, have you any little stories about Jock Steen? And you have a bit of a rump with him.
Oh, well, Jock was, he was the man, wasn't he? He won everything as a manager and as a kid. Growing up, that was my team from the south side of Glasgow. And eventually, you know, he was manager of Scotland. I ended up playing for Scotland in the World Cup. And one of the good stories, I think, would be with Jock was when I was at Ipswich, I'd normally score when you'd meet up on a Saturday night in Glasgow after your game for Ipswich Town. And I might have got one or I might have got two. Get on the plane, go up to Glasgow, and he'd be waiting for you. And there was George Burley, Johnny Wark, couple of blue noses they were, but
we don't want to talk about them.
Couple of blue noses, but we'd meet and Jock would say, "Yeah, see, you got another cup with Brazil. Well done. When are you going to score for Scotland?" And he used to say this all the time to me, and it was driving me mad. It got the stage on a Saturday when we were meeting up. I didn't want to score because I knew it was coming, right? And he was always waiting for you. And I say, "Sorry, boss. Given the chance, I will try. I'll get you one." So eventually, we played Wales down in Wales, and our record there was murder. Terrible it was. And we couldn't get a result. Anyway, we beat them down there. Me and Andy Gray scored. And he says, "Well done, son, get in there." That was a Saturday, right? On the Wednesday night, we're playing England at Wembley. And I just got my first goal for Scotland. Feeling great. Come on, bring it on. We've got the English at Wembley.
He dropped you.
Right? And he said to me, "Well, wait, this." He said, "You're looking forward to Wednesday?" I said, "Can't wait, boss. Can't wait." He says, "You're looking really good in training, but Wednesday's a big day." I went, "Yes." and we can beat them. He went, no, I'm talking about the derby. I went, what? He said, I'm talking about the derby at Epsom Wednesday afternoon. I went, what about it? He said, the boys, Dalglish, has told me you're on the favourite 33-1. He's now 3-1 favourite. I went, big mouth. I said, well, I had that 9 months ago, boss. He went, well, I've got a little proposition for you. And I didn't realise. Big Jock loved a bet, right? And I didn't realise this. And he said, I hear you've had, what, 100 quid each way? And I was, I said, well, maybe a bit more than that, 33-1. He said, I'll have a wee bit of that. I went, what? I said, I can't. It's 3-1 favourite now. I'm on at 33s. Don't be greedy. Think about it, right? So this went on. Monday we're out training. And he pulls me on the pitch saying, hey, you're looking great, son. Brilliant. He said, look, have you thought any more what I said to you about? I says, yeah, boss, I can't. You know, this was a punt. If he gets beat, he gets beat. He said, you'll cover your money. I'll have the same as you. And if he gets beat, you get your money back. I went, no.
I don't see that.
So anyway, the boys have heard about it and they're all saying, get the gaffer a bit of your bet. Give him a bit of your bet, you tight git. No. Tuesday, breakfast. All right, son, looking good. Thought about it. I went, oh, boss, leave it. This goes on and on. We come off the pitch after training. What worried me was Wednesday morning, we're going to do a little shadow play. We're going to take a few corners and set pieces, free kicks. I'm in some and I'm not in others. And then Worky looked at me, he said, hey, he's going to leave you out. I said, he can't leave me out. I just got my first goal. We've just beaten Wales for the first time in years. Can't leave me out. He said, well, I'd be careful that was you. So when we finished training, we went in to have our lunch. He said, right, what we're going to do, we're all going to watch the derby together. We're going to pack your bags. We'll come in, have lunch. We'll get down to Wembley early. We'll watch the derby first, so we're all together. We're going Jim Steele, who was the masseur. He was brilliant, Steely. And he had the Racing Post on the wall. It was the sport and life in those days. And he's Ladbrokes and Coral Card next to the phone. So if you wanted a bet and you wanted the form, it was there. It was the bookies, right? So we were all in there, and I'm looking for rain, right? Not for the game at night at Wembley. This horse needs a bit of cut in the ground. And it's only pissing down. I'm like, get in there. And all of a sudden, we're all in there, and they're pushing the last three in the stalls. Epsom Derby, 1983, right? Pushing them in, and I can see them coming in. I'm saying, get them off quick, get them off. And the door opens as the last one goes in. He says, where is he? I said, I'm here, boss. Right, I'm here, boss. He said, have you had time to change your mind? Have you thought about it, how much this means to me? This is to Jock Steen. I went, boss, I can't. They're off. Anyway. The horse wins 6 lengths.
Oh, my God.
Leicester Piggott on board.
Oh, my God.
10 or so, right? Get to Wembley. I've just won a few grand. A lot of money in those days. Won a few grand.
Still a lot of money.
Get to Wembley.
You're out.
Jock Steen. Great on the Saturday, boys. That's a proper result. And we can beat these here. I was thinking about making a few changes, but I think we'll just make one. We'll make one change. Charlie Nicholas of Brazil. And I looked at him, and the boys are pissing themselves laughing. And at the time, you know, if you're in dispute with your club, you don't, you know, and I think Charlie was leaving at the time. Celtic was going to either Man U or Liverpool or that. He went to Arsenal. And I looked at him and I couldn't believe it. And I sat on the bench and I was at Spurs at the time. And Graham Roberts, who was an animal, Graham, but he was my mate, but he was an animal. Tottenham Centre half playing for England. We had the same sponsor who promised him a 911 Porsche if he scored against the Jocks. And he smashed one for 35 yards for England. And Ruffy went down to save it, and I hit the post and came out. And I've jumped up laughing. And he's just glared at me, Big Jock, what are you laughing at? And then Johnny Wark was looking at him. I said, well, at least I've got a few grand when I get back, Warky. What you got? And then I got on for the last 20 minutes or 25 minutes. But he left me out. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. But those were great times. Great. I didn't realise how much a punter he was.
I just want to ask you a second. You weren't with Alex Ferguson, but he also liked to bet. What is it between betting, because we see some people losing the right to play and stuff.
Well,
talk to me about it.
Fergie, a little story about Fergie. So Fergie, I was born in the same hospital as Fergie, over in Govan, near what I call Castle Greyskulls.
Now, Govan's a beautiful sort of holiday destination in Glasgow, isn't it?
Yes. The Alsatians go down in threes, right? And then we moved to a little place called Sims Hill, and Fergie was very close to me. And he was an Rangers centre forward at the time, and I'm ashamed to say we go down to a place called Lynn Park and play football down there. And on the way back, we'd always pass Fergie's house, and I would pick his flowers because he was the Rangers number 9. over my shoulder. And that's shocking, that is. Those were bad days.
These are epic stories. We need to hear more about them. So please go on. You were there with Roy Keane. How was Roy? Because he seems to be the darling.
Well, I wasn't with Roy Keane. No. Roy came later, right? I was with Kevin, Gordon McQueen. Gordon McQueen, what a character he was, by the way.
Good-looking boy.
He was one of the funniest footballers I've ever met in my life, and a game boy. He was also a Rangers supporter, and he was hard as well. Whoa, he was from, was it Coburnie or somewhere down near where McCoys lives, right? Ali McCoys. But what a man he was. He was magic. But in those days, Paddy Crennan, do you remember Pat Crennan? So Pat Crennan was from the Gorbals, who played for Celtic and went to Man United. Now, he had a pub in Altrincham, and Altrincham's quite nice, by the way, right? We're not talking, with the greatest respect to Moss Side and places like that, and Govan, Altrincham was quite nice. Now, he had a pub there called The Park. And it was an Irish pub, and his Guinness was fantastic. And he had the jukebox there. It was magic. But we'd all go in there. Kevin Moran, Gordon, Brian Robson, Big Paul McGrath.
Oh, my God.
Paul was young at the time, but Paul would come in. Whiteside would come in. After every European game, we'd get off the plane, if we're away from home, straight to, we called it Uncle Paddy's. So when I was in the shit with a wife, I'd say to my daughter, say, don't worry about me, darling, just tell your mum I'm off to Uncle Paddy's. And that was Pat Crennan's pub. It was magic. Oh, and in those days, it was Sunday drinking time, and Martin, the barman from Galway, at 3:30 would say, boys, I've got to go to the cash and carry. There's the honesty book. Write down what you have. I'll see you at 7:00. And we'd go for a paper in the morning, pop into Uncle Paddy's and get home at midnight that night.
And the honesty book worked?
Of course.
Sometimes. But that's how we never won it.
No, but that was the era. That was the time. And I think that, you know, motor racing was like at that time, you know, James Hunt, if you go to motorcycle racing, he was big buddies with Barry Sheen. You know, these guys were living the life. But it was still the peak of performance for what everybody knew at that time.
And
the thought that the modern players, like I've just come from doing Formula E in Misano. One of the lead presenter for us is Germain Genis, you know, relatively young in terms of his retirement. I assume it'd be very different for someone of his generation or the players today. They can't go into a pub without social media giving them all sorts of problems. And you could be there mixed with the punters and they'd give you the privacy.
Without a doubt. It was so different then. Nowadays, telephones.
Everybody's life.
And to be honest, I hate to say it, but I'm glad I played when I did. I couldn't be a modern player now.
You'd like the money today.
No, I'd kill myself. I'd be dead now. If I had that money, I'd be dead. Guaranteed.
Well, maybe you should be playing now then.
That's nice.
Do I want 3 Sunseekers in Monaco Harbour? No, that's just being greedy.
Greedy. So anyway, we've got a couple of stories that you were involved in, but listen, we're on the football thing. So Ipswich was your heady days.
I mean, Ipswich was great. So Bobby Robson, the manager, 78, we won the FA Cup, runners up twice. The best one, Liverpool beat us. I think they had 14 games to go and won about 13, drew one. We couldn't do anything about that. They had a bigger squad than us. And talk about drinkers, by the way, they boys could go out and have a party. After a Saturday Anfield, they'd go out and come back Wednesday, stuff like that. But it didn't stop them being great, great players. So they beat us. And then Villa, we beat them home and away, knocked them out of the cup. And Villa were a cracking side. But in those days, you know, Villa won the league with 14 players. That's all they played.
Dion Dublin there then?
No, you had Gordon Cowans, you had Dennis Mortimer, Peter With, Gary Shaw, Alan Evans, people like that.
Fantastic.
We beat them home and away and knocked them out of the cup. But they won it. And the following year, so we beat them 3 times. We won the UEFA Cup, 81. We beat them 3 times. The following year, because they won it, they qualified for the Champions Cup and they were champions of Europe. They won the big one, Villa.
And you had already beaten them. The same lineup, the same team.
Yeah. But they were. Don't get me wrong, there were top players on that side. Tony Morley, people like that. It was a great time to play football.
Just, we must go back a little bit because I presume Kenny was at Liverpool at the time.
Dalglish was the king for me. As a kid, I watched him at Celtic. Loved him to bits. Played junior football then, went to Celtic, got on the side. I think it was it Cumbernauld Juniors? He played with Vic Davidson, then he got on the side and then went to Liverpool. Celtic fans hated him for it, leaving Celtic. They like that. Don't care how good you were, when you leave, that's it. And off he went. But look what he done at Liverpool. Yeah, absolute legend. I think
he's not a bad player with a absolute set of golf clubs in his hand either.
I was very privileged. My birthday, 15th of June, I kicked off the 82 World Cup. So Jock picked me in the opening game of the World Cup, 15th of June. And I had to pinch myself. I kicked off with Kenny Dalglish.
And Fowler, was he there then?
Robbie was, no, much younger. Much younger. Okay. Yeah. You know, that time was.
You're not very good
rushing.
With ages, are you?
No, but you know, sometimes I look at him and he conveys to me the age of about 38. And now I look at him and I know that that's changed.
Alan was a generation where they'd go for and have a pint. Robbie Fowler was a generation where they would do something different. Yeah. That's as much as
well,
I know.
From what they tell me, I wouldn't like to confirm that.
I'll tell you why. Exactly. One thing for sure is he could play.
Rumours could be terrible.
But that Liverpool side, right? I'll just soon as. Hansen, Lawrenson, Phil Thompson, Dalglish, Rush, Case.
Great names.
Terry McDermott, Sammy Lee, Phil Neal, Alan Kennedy, Grobbelaar.
You should be in Question of Sport and you would win.
Your memory is incredible.
Yeah. You know, there's all this aggravation because you missed out. You were with Big Ron.
I went from. Bobby went off. Bobby Robson went off to do other things. And there was a new guy came in, Bobby Ferguson, who's now passed, but we did not get on, okay? Couple of times in the bath, you know, the big communal baths, he'd come and have a go at me, and eventually I just thought, oh, come on, let's have it. And you get up, say, come on then, give us your best shot. Oh, yeah. And then another time I was up the gymnasium, and we're arguing, and I said, what's wrong with you? You just hate me. He said, what'd you say? And he was a Geordie, right? People thought his name was Bobby Ferguson, thought he was Scottish, but he wasn't. He was a Geordie.
Yeah.
And I ended up saying, you're a jock with no brains. And that was it. He had a bag of keys on him, like 20 keys, threw it at me. If it had hit me, it'd have killed me. He ordered everyone out. He picked the keys up, ran over, locked the gymnasium door, and everyone ran down the stairs, round the corner, up the other stairs, and there's a viewing balcony. And it was like the meerkats. Little heads popped up to see who was going to win the fight. Oh, it was chaos. I had to get out of there. And Tottenham came in before Man U. Ron was on the phone to me, but Tottenham came in. And I ended up going to Spurs. And it went great. 12 games, scored 6, beat Arsenal 5-0, scored. And then I had a break. And my problem with my back got worse and worse and worse. And eventually United came in. And they moved me on. I went to Man United. How lucky was I? I was at Spurs with Hoddle, Ardiles, people like that. You know, Ricky Villa.
Yeah.
I'm going to intervene. I've got to say, I'm looking above here. Someone who's just left us a couple of weeks ago, Joe Kinnear.
Joe was there
with you.
Joe was a little bit
older,
but I've not heard a bad word said about Joe.
No. Yeah. Top man.
Have you heard any bad words said about yourself from these former players?
Oh, I could list them here, but I'm...
And did you revel in that when you were playing?
David, doesn't bother me. No, not a... You know, we've all got opinions.
Yeah.
You get on with it. Life's too short.
Now, can I just ask before you go on, may I ask a question, Eddie?
It's your show.
Well, no, it's your show. But anyway, thank you for giving me... I'm just curious on the back injury, actually, because, first of all, how did that manifest itself? And do you think with the modern sports science and medical science we have today, they would have fixed that?
Well, it wasn't as simple as that because it was degenerative changes of the spine. So I needed a spinal fusion when eventually they found out what it was. I'll tell you a funny story, right?
About fusing your back? This is going to be hilarious.
Well, Botham had it, didn't he? Ian Botham had it and he was never the same.
Yeah.
But I wasn't having it. And I was only 27, right? So I decided I'll go and deal with it myself. PFA were not great to me. You've had a couple of moves, Alan. You've had a great career, World Cup and Tottenham, Man U, Ipswich. We'll move on, right? You know, don't worry about it. And it bugged me. So I went everywhere all around the country to try and get this sorted. Anyway, this fella tells me about a guy out near the other side of Colchester, down near the coast. They reckon he fixed Wayne Gretzky, the great ice hockey player's back. Same problem I had. And I just had a feeling, I went, this is going to be great. I can do this, right? And I said, one last chance to the wife. She said, I'm going to try it. It's a few quid, but I'm going to do it. She went, go on. Okay, no problem. So I make the appointment. And I get there really early. I'm all excited, right? And I mean all excited. And every time I hear a cat, the lady, the nurse says, Dr. Barbara, or Professor Barbara, is a little bit late. Traffic. Don't worry. He's on his way. Just go in, have a shower. Get the gown on, no problem. So I'm lying on the bed. Every car I hear on the gravel, it was a beautiful property. And I've got a good feeling about this. This is going to work, right? Anyway, every car comes in. I'm like, she went, no. Doctor will let us know when he's 2 minutes away. Eventually, she said, doctor's here. Well, this fella walked in, and the door opened, and I looked up in anticipation. He was like Alfred Hitchcock. He looked 97. He was bent over as if he'd just been walking in a hurricane outside. And he said, all right, son, don't worry. I know exactly what it is. Just bear with me. And I couldn't take my eyes off him because he walked over into the sterilized thing and he came out with this injection. I've never seen a needle as big. And he said, don't panic. Don't let it scare you because I have to put it in the ligaments. I know what's wrong with you. I'll put it into 12 of your 13 ligaments. It's a sugar and a local anesthetic. But I have to keep it in there. I don't want to keep taking that out. And then I'm like, really?
Oh.
Anyway, so away he went. And I lay there for half an hour. I could not move. And I had this injection.
Oh, my God.
And eventually they said, let's try and get you up. It was a load of bollocks. It never worked. Never worked. I felt it saying to him, try it on yourself, mate. Your back's worse than mine. He walked in, honestly. He was like, the old Hitchcock moves. I went, I don't believe it. So that was it. I decided enough's enough. No more quick fixes.
I don't think we have stories of that caliber, do we?
Well, I only remember them pulling the epidural needle out for my ex-wife when she was going through birth and looking at this thing and thinking, my God, I was like having to bite my hand so as not to make a noise. It was frightening what they could say.
He was probably a lovely man, but when he walked in, I just went, oh, I don't believe it, honestly. Yeah. So and it didn't work, so that was it. I was finished. And then after that, I had a few months off. I was in a bar in London, and I met this guy, and he said, Alan, are you Alan Brzezinski? I went, yeah. He said, I think his name was something like Sava Popovic, right? Yugoslav, or Serb now. And he said, I'm looking for a place to come to Australia. I says, I can't. I've not played for ages. I played a little bit non-league. He went, no, I'm told. Can you get through a game if we look after you in training? I went, well, why? So we talked about money. Talked about nice flights for me and the two kids at the time and the wife. I'll give it a go because my brother was out there. He was in Melbourne. And went out there, a place called Wollongong.
I've been to Wollongong. Sydney, right? Yeah, I've been there.
Well, I can't believe it. First four games, we won 3, drew 1, scored. And the guy who was running the club was very good with me. He said, Alan, just have a swim, just tick over. Brilliant. So I was out there for 4 games. I had to go home. The following weekend, centre-forward broke his leg. Phone call, can you come back? I'm like, all right. But I'm coming back for 6 weeks. Went over there, 1-4, drew 2. So I ended up going 3 spells out there to Wollongong. We won the league. It was fantastic. Came back about 4 weeks later, got a phone call to do with Trevor Francis because Trevor came out and said, Alan Brazil's all right. He'll give you... So he's gone to Switzerland... a team called FC Baden near Zurich. He says, Alan can do your job for a year. And I got a call. Guy used to play for Forest, Ramon De Ponte, invites me over. Good dough. He said, I'll look after you. And I had a year in Switzerland. It was magic. Magic. And it was the Serie B, and we got the playoffs, just didn't make it into the big league, and I had a brilliant time. But I was just missing home a wee bit. But what it did for me was the guys in the team were fantastic. We ended up going the weekend to Davos, where they have the big business conference centre. The local sports shop give me all the gear, the skis. So we get the edge of the mountain, the Rhinohorn.
Had you skied before?
No. I'm at the edge of the mountain. And they said, right, we'll go down here and we'll do it. I went, whoa. Hold on a wee minute. How'd I get there? They looked in astonishment. You don't ski? I went, no, teach me. And that was a Friday. And by the Sunday, I was skiing. And I taught my kids to ski, my two oldest, and both skied for Great Britain Juniors. Slalom, Giant Slalom, Super G.
Great story.
And do you still ski today?
My knees are gone now as well. So no.
To just après?
I whisper an angel ski. I've just come back. It was brilliant.
Excellent.
He's a Jägermeister, sir. Yeah.
But I love it. It's my favourite holiday.
Savage on that.
It's great. Mary great Bell, family Courchevel, holiday. Bosch. I love it.
Yep. Well, we had your birthday in Courchevel.
I have to say that skiing birthday. Is something very special, isn't it? But it's the lunches, isn't it?
The lunch, the food, for me, and I did take my kids out of school a wee bit to get them out there because they were training and they were up in the glacier in the summer and stuff like that, whether it be in Austria or whether it be in Teen, Hintertox. And I took them out of school because I thought that was an education for them.
Of course it was.
That they wouldn't get at school. Nowadays, you get fined heavily by them kids. And now their kids are skiing as well. It's magic.
And have they suffered from missing some of the school to pursue their dreams? Not at all.
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
The bank
yeah.
of dad.
Yes.
No. That's why I'm still working.
Indeed. Well,
I can't help but to mention you mentioned somebody that I became very friendly with. And very sad to see his loss as well. And that's the last time I saw Graham Souness was at Trevor Francis' funeral.
Yeah.
And what a magic, nice person he
was. Trevor was lovely.
He was just...
A lovely guy. So he was out in America,
went to Italy.
Detroit with me, and in Australia. Fantastic.
I see, okay.
And Paul Mariner came out as well, who was my buddy, who I played with and had all the success. England centre forward. And my best years were at Ipswich, without a doubt, with Mariner. 28 goals I got 1 year, and he helped a lot there. Helped a lot, and he passed as well. So we're at that age.
We need to be thankful for.
So we're only here for a visit.
Well, that could be a good title for a book. So you've lived an era. You've got the basis of a script for a movie here. Your life, all of the stories you've just shared with us in this brief amount of time.
David, I've had a brilliant life. Look, we all have.
Yeah. I've got no regrets.
You know, you have the glitz of Formula One and the band and all that. And
oh, yes, band.
I've had a brilliant life. I wouldn't change it for anything.
Not even with a magic wand.
Would you buy 10 years?
No, because I'll live another 10 years. I've got longevity in my family.
In the genes.
Yes.
Yeah, but...
Mum and Dad were high 80s. Mind you, they lived a bit different to me, so maybe I haven't.
I think there's not many people have lived like you. Now, I have first-hand experience of this on a number of occasions. And at some stage, when you mentioned about the horses, we also have to talk about Cheltenham. And I'm going to bring you back to that horse racing thing, because I remember when you were with poor old Jock Stain by, you must be a right old misery. What is it with Scottish people? You're fucking tight, aren't you? You just don't like spending money.
Oh, I don't
He's the same.
David, I don't think
Shall I hit him or do you want to?
Listeners, please, this isn't a question. I decided that I had a call. Alan and I, with a couple of pals, we decided we'd meet up at about 11 o'clock, which is quite early for the start of a horse race in Cheltenham. But it is, you know, the Irish government moved there and they have all the cabinet meetings in the same place because it's such a huge draw, not just for Irish people, but I think it's a huge draw. It's becoming ridiculous. You can't move in the place. But anyway, we commandeered this table in the middle of Cheltenham. And I said, Alan, how are you? La, la, la. We moved up. And I think, I'm not sure Kevin Moran was there, but anyway, I saw this table, and on the table was 16, 18 pints of Guinness, all freshly pulled, and they looked absolutely majestic. And I'm saying, oh, Alan, you've got a lot of pals coming. He said...
It was like a Monet painting, wasn't it? Instead of
sunflowers. Well, the Monet painting soon disappeared because
sounds
he consumed
delicious.
Most of them. He said to me, no, I don't have any friends. They're for us. And I'm saying, oh, my divine judge. I don't know how I'm going
to play. That's before the rush comes in.
Playing spot the road. Anyway, that was the first occasion.
He's not used to buying drink, you see. He's used to people supplying it. That's why.
Funny you should say that. I don't think he bought that, did he?
Actually, I probably didn't.
Yeah. Anyway, go on.
You're the master
Shelton.
Blagger.
So, horse racing was an important part. So it was football and horse racing in that era. Man.
Only because Ipswich is quite close to Newmarket.
Yeah.
And there was another education for me. It was an expensive education, but I still wouldn't change it. We were invited down to Robert Sangster's place. Charles St. George, who bailed Lester Piggott out when he had the problem with the tax man, who was a Lloyd's underwriter. The Craven meeting, which has just gone, just a few days ago, in Newmarket, he invited us to his summer house down there. The butler was there, Lester was there, Steve Cotham was there, Pat Edry was there. And I looked, I went, I've got to have a bit of this. This is life. I've got to have a bit of this. You've got to believe that you can have that one day. And I just loved it so much. Not just having a bet. I loved the breeding side of it. In fact, I'm involved now at a place called Newsell's Stud Farm, which is magnificent, 1,250 acres, with Mr. Adelis. Mr. Hoddle's involved. And we help the guy out. We bring some nice clients to them. They get involved in the bloodstock. They
buy a few horses and off they go.
So it does seem to go hand in glove, doesn't it? The football and the horses. We've never really had that. You've always been keen on the horses. I've never been to a horse race in my life.
Oh, really? Royal Ascot. You must have been at Royal Ascot.
I've never been.
Unbelievable.
We just, where I grew up in the southwest of Scotland, you know, I guess you'd go, you know, Ayr and Kilmarnock or something. But
well, I was meant to be Ayr races in a couple of days. But, yeah. I've got an engagement and they didn't tell me when it was and I can't let the people down, so I can't go.
You can't go. Well, I've never been.
So horses, you're in the stud plan, you're in the breeding side, whereas you know what's incredibly cheap? And Lee Westwood had a whole lot of horses in Cape Town. So we have 7 or 8 Maries in a syndicate, not me, Marie, with Johan Rupert's wife, Gaynor, magnificent lady. And we've had 3 winners since Christmas time. So we're very happy with what goes on down there. And
well, Lee, Lee loves it.
But he did really well down there. And Lee loves it. He likes a bet too.
How much science is when you talk about the stud, like the bloodline? Is it as simple as you just find a winner and then, you know, that's it? Or is there a bit more?
You can have a fluke. You can buy something who's a bad walker, as a yearling. You look and you say, well, he's not well bred and he walks funny. No, we'll get rid of that. And he might turn into, there's a beautiful filly called Attraction, trained by Mark Johnson, who won the Guineas. And if you'd seen her walk as a youngster, you wouldn't have touched her with a barge pole, right? But in general, the best bred horses from the best line, there was a lovely horse, one at that Craven meet I was telling about the other day, who was the same dam as Franco. Now, Franco was an absolute freak. And going back to our stud, our stallion down there is Nathaniel. His first race at Newmarket, the money was down. This could not get beat. And 2 of them went clear of the field, and it was a hot, hot maiden. And the one who beat him was Franco.
No.
So now and again, you can be unlucky.
Yeah.
But Nathaniel is a beautiful horse. He's our stallion.
So let me ask you this, then. When you mentioned Franco, it makes me think of Frankie Dettori.
Just had 6 winners, by the way.
In America. Yeah, I read that.
Frankie did.
Yeah, 6 in the trot. Boom, yeah. Boom, boom.
But the last time I saw him, I thought he was retiring.
Yeah, me too.
So is that a different type of riding
there's
racing?
Frankie's now talking about coming back and riding some of the big races for the owners.
Super jockey.
Yeah. Oh, no, Frankie.
But he's not with McTomb anymore. He's relieved of that.
He was, you know, Godolphin. He was with John Gosden. They fell out, but now they're pals again. John and Thady Gosden. So Frankie's in great, you know, form, great shape.
Good stuff. Right. Well, look, if I can bring this a little bit linked to cars, if
really?
That's okay.
Oh, why?
Well, just one question, because when I look at modern players, if you go down any of the, you know, down Chelsea and you see them driving, you know, they've got all the fancy supercars. Cars and
good luck to them.
Players and money has always been. Of your time, did you ever put some money into some Hot Wheels or?
No.
It's never your thing.
What's my best car? Probably S-Class Merc. I drive a newish Discovery. I was going to change it for a Range Rover. That does me. You know, I can't get in a Ferrari now. Can't get out. I maybe get in it, but I can't get out of it. So, you know, it's not for me, but I do have some friends who've got some serious cars, and it's an investment rather than just for fun as well. So it's maybe something I should have got into. But when I was playing football, I didn't have the money.
And when you were a boy, was it a dream car? Was it like a, you know, a
My dream was to, when I first got in the Ipswich team, I used to get the bus home and I used to do my head in. I've got to buy a car. Came back from America, Detroit. Came back, Bobby Robson. I was on 55 quid a week for Ipswich. I'd done well in America, I was telling you earlier, Detroit. And they gave me an apartment. They gave me a gremlin, it was called, an orange gremlin. It'd be a clapped-out Mini in this country, right?
Yeah.
But it was a car. It didn't matter. And I came back, and Bobby said to me, there's a contract. You've done well. You're a naughty boy. You went missing in
somewhere.
Where was it now? I went missing a couple of places, missed a flight home and stuff. But I still got back to Detroit, right? It was just wonderful. Boston, I went missing in Boston. And there was another place I went missing. Anyway, cut a long story. She came back, offered me double. I went, no. She said, what do you mean no? I said, you can't offer me double. I've done really well. I was playing against George Best over there, right? I was playing against top people. And I held my own and I loved it. If I don't get it and my contract runs out, I'll go back there. And he went, yeah, we'll see about that. You'll regret this. Anyway, the 55 quid a week turned into 300 a week and 12 grand signing, right?
Life-changing
so
at the time.
So the first thing I thought, absolutely. So up to the Toyota garage, a green Toyota Celica, 6 grand.
Oh, yes.
I'll have a bit of that. But for once I didn't dive in. I went, I'll come back tomorrow and I'll pay you and I'll sign it. Oh, Mr. Mazzola, it might go. I said, you can wait till tomorrow. Went back in the Ipswich Town Centre, bumped into Russell Osman, who is good Teddy player. Butcher's partner, centre-backs. Russell, great guy. Russell always seemed to have a little bit more than me. He was a little bit more posher. you know, and he was there before me at Ipswich and played England rugby. And he says, you look rather pleased yourself. So I told him the story. I said, I'm going up there to get it tomorrow. I says, why? What you been up to today? He said, I've just bought my first house. Well, my jaw dropped. What do you mean you bought your house? I'm in digs. What do you mean? How can you afford a house? Easy. You put $6,000 down and you borrow the rest. I thought he's doing it again to me. I looked at him, I said, is there any left? He says, there's two left. I've got one. I'll make a call if you want. I went, do it. And that was it.
You bought the house.
Salika went out the window. I bought the house and I got a Triumph Dolomite Sprint second hand instead.
I remember that. My grandmother had a Triumph Dolomite Sprint.
Everyone had.
Great look. I had the overdrive switch
Correct.
On the top.
That was it.
And yeah. you couldn't keep them in valves either. You were always dropping valves.
So I was like, it can't do me again.
And then you were a property tycoon.
Well, I wouldn't say that. It was a three-bedroom house, but it was. I was on the ladder.
I'm in a two-bedroom apartment in Monaco. You're a bedroom more than me.
Yeah. And me too.
Yeah, but $40,000 a week.
He's on $40,000 a second, let me tell you that.
So I'm
surprised he's even here.
I've been up and down.
Oh, well, that's the journey of life. It's a journey of life, isn't it? But I love how no regrets and nothing will change.
Oh, no.
So you mentioned one thing there, that you had the Ferrari and you couldn't get into it or out of it. And I've heard a weird story, because I absolutely love listening to Michael O'Leary, the boss man of Ryanair, because he comes out with absolute classics. And he's as tough and as rough as everything. He's from Mullingar, so that says a lot
for him.
That's
not the reason I left Mullingar. He says,
I know, I worked there in the bank all those many years ago. Now, what I want to know about you is, there's a story going around that you once sat in a Ryanair and he had the seats were too small and you couldn't get out of the chair.
Well, that is true. That is true.
Tell us about that story.
That was my story on radio.
Was it?
Yeah.
So I picked it up from that.
Hips. I can't believe that for a minute. Yeah. Did you go in a child seat?
It was an old plane. It was an old Ryanair plane.
Of course
it was. As you know, he doesn't invest too much in new stocks.
I blame him. He is an operator.
I last saw him in the Ligon Arms, not this Cheltenham before.
But he's massive into his horses. Massive.
I know he is. But no, it was correct. I squeezed in, and when I got up, the seat came with me. So my missus said, that's it, you're going on a diet. But we still fly, we still get on jet tours, we still get on. My favourite airport, City Airport. I love going on to the city down to whatever, whether it's the south of France or whether down to Malaga, I love it.
We're in for one more little story that actually connects the two of us. I'd like his memory, because his mind is so fresh and agile. And talk me through this.
His not favourite line is, enough about you, DC. Let's talk about me.
This is about Alan Brazil.
Because we
don't get people like him on our show.
I know, I'm loving it.
And I'm absolutely enthralled.
Can you let him talk?
No, but it was one occasion. Could you imagine an Irishman being asked to speak at the 50-year anniversary of the Great Lions? Because I know your granddad was a big fan of the Great Lions.
Yes.
But we had the trophy and everything there. Now, I had no idea. There's a great friend of ours called Gavin Kelly asked me, would I consider with the CEO of Celtic, would I be the speaker?
So, and no doubt you got Celtic watch.
Well, I got the lot.
Did you?
Absolutely, but not on me today.
Celtic watch is a beauty. Can I say what it is?
Yeah.
It's a Rolex Hulk, and on the back it's got the Celtic crest, Lisboa, 1967.
Did I see you with that, or did I see something? I think I've seen that somewhere.
I have put that aside.
Did you put it up for auction?
Oh, you can't. How dare you?
David, I mean, will you have some semblance of decorum here? We're talking about a sensible man who spent his life, he's damaged his back, he's not got no knees left, and he's given it all for the fans.
I know, but deep down you're shallow, and it's all about the money.
So I'm in the Grosvenor House. It is rammed. Well, rammed for various reasons, because it was the anniversary of the 50. Have no idea why I was there, but I was about to speak, and this particular guy...
What were you going to speak about?
I was talking about, because I was a shareholder. I had about 8 or 10% of that place.
What was it, 8 or 10?
It was probably 8, but I wanted it to be 10. And it was Dermot Desmond and I had a bit of...
I've never met Dermot.
Oh, no, well, I'll have to arrange that.
I've never met Dermot.
Dermot's a man that you need on your show, on the talk.
Yeah. I know. I won't drop him in, but I know a good friend of his who plays golf with. And it's another good story, right? When Dermot brought Ange Postecoglou to Celtic... Now, I'd never heard of Ange Postecoglou.
Neither had I.
Right? And I said, I don't believe it. And Dermot, this got back to Dermot. And basically, he got the hump with me. You know, who are you to challenge my judgment, right? And it turned out, I played against Postecoglou for over in Australia. for Wollongong against South Melbourne.
No.
Someone sent me the programme, so there you go, that's who he is. I went, I don't believe it. Small world,
did you run ring round him?
So Dermot, well, I think so, but I don't know, I can't remember. But Dermot said he'd come on the show if I apologised live on air.
No way.
And oh no, I said to the guy who's Dermot's friend, I said, of course I will. Let's arrange it, but I didn't.
So
I'd love to meet him.
So you talked about, because he was a big star in Celtic, but even before that, because at that stage when I came, I was heavily in, loved Coventry, and I became very friendly with Gordon Strack.
Yeah.
Gordon Strachan. And Dermot Desmond...
I played for Coventry as well, you know.
I know that. The Sky Blues. But anyway, back to the story. Dermot rings me up. He said, Jesus, we need a manager. Because O'Neill was leaving, or he said that he wanted to go, and we needed to find a replacement. And Dermot said, yeah, any idea? And I said, if it was me, and I had the investment that you have in Celtic, I would definitely to a Scot who knows what's going on, has his feet underground. He's not everyone's very favourite, but I absolutely adore this man. And I introduced him to Strachan. Do you know where that deal was done? In JP McManus's box in Cheltenham on the day of the Gold Cup. And wow. It was done at lunchtime. And Strachan was a massive success in Celtic.
Wow. And what was your cut?
Oh, friendship and love and affection and
two
pints.
Two more shares. you know the Coolmore box?
That is very stylish. Oh, and it's the box next door to the Queen.
I've driven past it, going to the Goodwood racetrack.
But the wines they have in the Coolmore box, wow. We're talking proper.
God, I'm getting thirsty.
So let us go back in time a touch, because I was about to tell a story about the Grosvenor, but I didn't ever finish it. So
you'd started telling me stories 30 years ago that you'd never finished.
But this was a case that the listeners should know. I must have said something. He seems to think I said something about the Queen. Well, go on, tell us the story. What happened?
You were talking about, I don't know what it was, but you were talking about the royal family, but it wasn't nasty then. But the guy misinterpreted what you said and suddenly started hurling abuse.
But now he jumped on the stage to
Well, he eventually did. Yeah, but he was hammered, wasn't he?
But I needed you and big Gavin Kelly to pull him off me.
He was never going to get you. Don't worry about that.
I would have let him have a couple of punches before you pulled him off.
I tell you what, he was very close to it. I mean, he was swinging everything at me.
But that was some night, wasn't it?
Jesus.
I went into the Dorchester first, and the guy behind the bar looked at me and said, Alan, are you going next door? I went, yeah. He went, be careful. It's Bedlam in there. I went, I know it will be. Don't worry about that.
I'm ready for it.
So many friends in there who were at that gig. It was magic, absolutely magic. Park Lane had never seen it like it. I swear, there was people lying everywhere. Hyde Park was full of it. It was just. But you had to see it to believe it. Oh, there was no trouble.
No trouble. Yeah.
Just
no. They were all absolutely hammered. Most of them slept on garden benches in Hyde Park. Anyone that couldn't make it home, because people don't go home. People only take the train from the late night train after the football to get back to London because they won't pay and stay in a hotel.
Oh, they were from everywhere. The banners from everywhere, Melbourne and, you know, all over Ireland and all over Europe, to be honest. It was. I did a gig for Talk Sport in Marbella. And do you remember Silks all those years ago? There was a Silks by the sea and we went up to Seville for the against Josie's Porto, Celtic Porto. And I went with a guy, Mike Parry, who, you know, I worked with here and he was my boss. He sacked me 3 times and brought me back 3 times. And we got up there.
You're like a boomerang.
I've never seen anything like it in my life. And McCoist always says, yeah, right. There was 100,000 Celtic fans there. Everywhere you went, they were coming from everywhere. You couldn't get flights out of Glasgow, Edinburgh. So they're flying to Germany and flying back in, or flying to, you know, parts of the world and flying. It was incredible. And it came to game time to go there. And we'd driven up from Marbella, which wasn't far at all. Anyway, I gave my 2 tickets. So there was a guy there from near Cumbernauld, old fella, lovely fella. And he'd never been on a plane before. Didn't have a ticket. I went, here you go, mate, have mine. And he said, I can't believe it. He started crying. He was really old, the fella. And eventually I said, in fact, I have to have Mike Parry's. So we finish off our drinks and we're about to go to the game. He says, come on, we'll miss the game. I said, well, I've got something to tell you. He went, what? I said, that old fella, Huey, I had to give him my ticket. He went, you idiot. So I've got you sit with him. I says, no, I've given yours away as well. And to make matters worse, I give him our hotel rooms.
Oh, my
God. So we watched the game in the bar and just stayed up all night drinking and had breakfast and then drove back to Marbella.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, remind me again. When was this?
He knew who you were.
I knew his cousin from Newmarket, but I didn't know Huey.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you, I think I was at that game, and I went with a great golfer called Padraig Harrington.
Oh, yeah. I spoke to Padraig last couple of weeks, ahead of the Masters.
He's a big Celtic fan. Anyway, go on, next story.
What is it about the Scots and Irish, and sorry for leaving the other nations of the United Kingdom out at this particular moment, but what is it about us that we travel? We're travellers. Yeah. You're rattling off countries you've been to, places you've played professionally, but we're homebirds in a way that your hearts are always where we come from, but we don't tend to stay there.
No,
we don't live there.
It's weird, isn't it? When I go home for a weekend, I absolutely adore it. I adore it.
Yeah, but you couldn't live there.
Well, if I had to, I would, but I don't mean that in a nasty way. You know, my family are all brought up down here. They're English, if you like, born in England, so that's why I have to look after them, but I love going home.
Yeah, but they're Scottish all the time. See, my four kids, they are all convinced that they're Irish, even though only half of them are born here.
It's funny you should say that, because we went to Twickenham and I had to do a little speech at London Scottish where Ian McGeachan.
Yeah, sure.
And we as we left to walk up to Twickenham, there was two big baskets, one with Scottish flags and one with English flags, St George. And St Andrews, or I think it might have been a Line Rampart at the time. And my daughter was there. And I said to her, I says, take your pick. No pressure. Take your pick. And she grabbed a scarf and a Scottish flag.
Of course.
And then we got to Twickenham, met my oldest daughter, who's married to an English guy, works in the city. And they came out to get the train after the game. She was all decked out in tartan. No pressure whatsoever. They feel for Scotland.
Well, I think... okay, slightly different. Zoe, my eldest daughter, still plays paddle for Ireland, even though, yes, she was born in Ireland. And the other ones, they were brought up in England, went to school in very pommy accents and stuff like that, but they all have the allegiance to Ireland. If you ask them where they're from, they'd say Ireland. Uh-huh. And what passports have they got? They're Irish passports, mind you.
That's for tax reasons.
Don't be so ridiculous. It's about a passion and style and history.
That's just so we can stay in Monaco all year round.
They don't count my days like his.
Well, I have a similar thing where my son, who's 15, his mother's Belgium. He was born in Brussels, but he speaks like a Scotsman. He is Scottish as far as he's concerned, and he's never lived there. He goes there a lot. You know, my brother and my sister-in-law are like a brilliant second family to him. He spends a lot of time, but he's got that draw. Well, anyway, we should probably bring this, what seems like a sort
I'm on radio in an hour.
Yeah, well, look.
I start at 16.
Because I was hoping I might get stuck here.
You have been incredibly giving of your time. So it's probably good that I go back on script just to wrap things up. One of the things that's got in the script is any final thoughts, Eddie, but I don't think I'm going to ask you that because you'll give us them.
No.
So I'm going to run straight into it's been great having you all here listening to Formula for Success. Listeners, you can keep watching us now, actually. Now it's on YouTube, and we'll be back next week. So, Alan, thank you very much. I've absolutely
absolute
loved
pleasure.
The stories. You've been an absolute gentleman. EJ, less so. But I'll
of
see
course.
You next week for another podcast. It's been FFS.
Well, you managed to say it properly this time.
I've really struggled with saying because for fuck's sake, it's easier.
Yeah, absolutely, everyone knows that.
EJ, so, you're signing us off?
I'm going to sign you off by saying I've been chasing this man to come on the show for quite a while.
And
I want to say he's got out of his...
He's a busy man.
He has got out of his sick bed because he has still got the remnants of a little flu. Ladies and gentlemen, Alan Brazil.
Pleasure.
A legend, not just of storytelling, not just of radio, but some of those stories are epic.
Sign off, Eddie.
I'm going to... just to let you know I'm still alive and well.
Let's go and have a pint. I'm thirsty.